Good Monday morning to you. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. Our producer is Matt Neely behind the glass. Thank you, Matt, for all you do for us. Coming up tomorrow, General Ted Maxwell will be the host. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger will be here. And on Thursday, Tom Moulton. I'll return on Friday with business success stories. You know, on Monday's Jump in Tucson, the theme is wonder at the University of Arizona. And we like to talk about the good things that are going on at the university, the wonderful people, the research, the students, the faculty, staff. Lots of news about the U of A lately about lots of different things, but we like to talk about the good things. And the Monday segment is the program is sponsored by Michael Kasser of Haleakala Companies. So our first guest today is someone who's doing a lot of good work at the University of Arizona, Dr. Caleb Simmons. Good morning.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just congratulate you first on your re-election to the Faculty Senate.
Thank you very much.
Is that a sentence or is that a
you know, I've been receiving a lot of text messages that are both congratulations and condolences.
Yeah.
But it's important work, and yes. I'm really happy to be able to represent faculty and in the important work we're doing as a university.
Right. So you are based out of the religious studies program, but you've been assigned a new thing, but along with your governance with the Faculty Senate, you're also now the Executive Director of Arizona Online.
I am, and it's been a wonderful experience. I mean, it's such an important time for rethinking higher education and the different ways that we can reach students. So this is an opportune time to make the move, and it's been a wonderful learning experience for me.
Are you still teaching any classes in the religious studies program, or are you strictly over managing the process with Arizona Online?
My first year, I tried to teach while doing the administrative work, and it was a challenge because my courses tend to be pretty large, so it's a lot of emails with students as well. So now I've decided that I'll teach in the winter summer session when things are a little slower on campus. So just shifting that workload a little bit, but still, I mean, in my mind, to do my job well, I have to continually engage with students to think about how we can continuously improve the experience.
It shows you how long ago I went to school there. We had this conversation once at the Arizona Sands Club. Two of my favorite professors from the U of A back in the late 70s was Father Bob Burns. Dr. Burns was with the religious studies program for many, many years. And then Father Andrew Greeley was a guest lecturer there. Every spring he would come out and come from Chicago, and his sections were packed. There were hundreds of people in those sections because at the time, you know, he was a quite prolific author. And at one time he actually did the color on, if you want to, you know, like a color man on when Pope John Paul II was installed. He was the color man on one of the network TV stations.
Well, Father Burns is, I mean, a true inspiration. One of the first things I did when I was hired here as a faculty was a celebration of his 80th birthday. Mm. And of course, I didn't really know him or anyone, but it was amazing to see how many former students came back for that celebration and really, right. Made a lasting impact on me about, how much our involvement with students can shape their lives in ways that they would travel back to Tucson to celebrate your birthday. And it was really a pretty touching experience.
That is amazing. And, of course, we're going to talk about Arizona Online, but it is interesting that there is a religious studies program at the University of Arizona. And when you think about education and in a public university, how religious studies can be part of that. You have a perspective on that?
Yeah, religious studies in public universities has a long history after World War II, and the first one was at University of Iowa. And it does, at a certain point, seem antithetical to being public until you think about religion like any other human institution. It has a great impact on history, on the way people see the world, on economics, on politics. So religious studies scholars really look to understand that human side of religion, how it's influenced people, how it continues to influence people. My own work is really in religious history, so I focus on late medieval, early modern, and colonial kingship and how religious rhetoric helped shape that. So while it might seem out of place, really when we dive into it as a human institution, it's one of the most important ways that we can understand how we can become good citizens and good actors and how rhetoric can influence us in different ways.
When I teach over at the Eller College and we teach marketing and advertising, we talk about your target market, and we go into demographics and geographics and behavioristics, but psychographics certainly mm-hmm. is a major part of that. And just the way people see the world, their religious, I call it the background of their life. It's kind of like their culture. It's just kind of there all the time, and it kind of frames the perspective that young people have, and well, all of us have for our own lives.
Without a doubt. I mean, working primarily in India and on Hinduism and coming from the rural Southeast, I mean, it was difficult at first when I moved there to be able to see just how you operate when you have different assumptions about, grand things like the scope of time. Mm-hmm. The way I was raised, it was very linear, and there it's circular, and that actually does really impact the way that you view the world from just the very foundational level.
Right. Well, we didn't come here to talk about religious studies per se. We came here to talk about Arizona Online, but let's talk just briefly before the break, talk a little bit about the Faculty Senate for a minute or two. You're obviously engaged in that process and have done a lot of work there. In the headlines a lot right now. And what is the purpose of the Faculty Senate, and what's your role there?
The Faculty Senate is part of the broader shared governance environment at the university. And shared governance is vital to the maintenance of the institution. It's important to have multiple perspectives, not just from administrators, but faculty really need to have a voice in the future of the institution. And that needs to be a collaborative process. Faculty Senate itself is part of the constitution and bylaws of the faculty, and it's where we can have a representative governance structure to deal with issues related to academics and curriculum, and that's the purview. And so we have senators from every college. Mm-hmm. We have at-large senators, which is what my role is, and we discuss the curricular matters of the university, the academic matters, giving our stamp of approval before it goes on to the Board of Regents.
I was witness to the most recent Faculty Senate meeting this week, and it was interesting to watch. We had Dr. Mark Stegeman on last Monday, and it was interesting just to watch him as the parliamentarian and to watch you as you interjected your perspectives on some things. It's those meetings can be rather contentious sometimes, but it was good. It was interesting. Well, we'll come back in just a little bit. We're going to talk about Arizona Online and your new assignment, a relatively new assignment, and we'll talk about what the prospects are for Arizona Online, and maybe a little bit talk about that other online thing that will probably be phased into Arizona Online eventually here. So we're with Dr. Caleb Simmons, who is the Executive Director of Arizona Online at the University of Arizona. And you're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back in just a few minutes here. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley. Today is our Monday Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. Our guest today is Dr. Caleb Simmons, the Executive Director of Arizona Online. Welcome back.
Thanks.
So Arizona Online, about almost 10,000 students are engaged in that. So tell us about the experience that a student would have at Arizona Online.
The University of Arizona Online is our modality for delivering curriculum to students in a fully asynchronous format. So it's all pre-recorded, posted online. Students can access it at any time, but it's the same faculty, same curriculum that we have at the main campus in Tucson, is looking to be able to deliver that content to people who might not be in a situation to where they can come to class. And one thing that I found really interesting when I joined Arizona Online was the city with the highest representation of our student body is Tucson, which shows us that there's people here who have affinity with the university, but for whatever reason, they can't make it to campus during the normal teaching hours.
Right.
And I think that's reflective of something larger that's going on, that students have a lot of obligations. Mm-hmm. It's not like when we were in undergrad where the assumption was everybody was there and that was your sole focus. Majority of our students are working, have care obligations. So Arizona Online provides a pathway for students like that to be able to have their education meet their goals, but do it in a way that allows them to continue to live their lives and support themselves. And if this is the case in Tucson, it's really, as we know from data, it's really the case everywhere in the U.S. that students want education, but necessarily can't always go seek it out. So we need to find them and meet them where they are.
And I can vouch for the fact that it's the same curriculum and the same instructor and so forth. I've for the last dozen or more, maybe even more years, I've taught online specifically in the winter break and the summer break and some prereqs that the Eller students need in order to do some things. And it's the exact same syllabus that I use for the ground class that we just adapted it for the online experience. And it is asynchronous, meaning that the students kind of can look at it at 3 o'clock in the morning and do their work if they have to, but they're still getting the full impact of what I would do in the classroom. It's just delivered in a different way, and but they still have to interact with one another just like they would in a classroom.
And I love that you said that and gave that testimonial, because you know there is a lasting understanding of online that's lingered from when it was a real startup industry, mm-hmm. where this was a lesser than educational format. And, it's come a long way since then. But one thing we have realized is that if you try to take an in-person class and just record it with a camera in the back of the room or with your laptop, it's not going to be the experience that students need. So it's really you can take the same curriculum and think about intentionally the modality and how you can use the tools of recording, editing, peer engagement that's available online and that students are used to, especially with social media interactions. And we can actually make this it's not going to be the same as in person, but we can make it as rigorous and as community building academic experience as they would have in an in-person class.
Yeah, the last two summers, last summer I was in Hawaii and the summer before that I was in Minnesota, but I was still teaching the class. And of course, from the faculty perspective, you front load it. You load the information in early, and then you're interacting with the students. But every day I would be online for 2 or 3 hours working with students, but individually because they were, or in small groups because they were working asynchronously, which is really important. But that 100% online process is good. You know, you mentioned that they can get the same education they can if they were on campus. You have over 150 undergraduate and graduate degrees available online, correct?
We do, and growing every day.
Yeah. And so I'll highlight a couple of them, but the one I think probably you were most recognized for would probably be the online MBA, correct? The number 7 in the country?
It is. And I actually am also a product of that online MBA. I finished up my degree, so I know firsthand of its rigor. And it's very fun to see my colleagues on campus who are also my professors and be able to discuss my performance in class. So it's right. It is a wonderful program and one that is really been able to grow both in size, but also in quality. It's, recognized widely for the great quality.
And when you think about it from the management's perspective, Dean Cannon and the Eller College and the MBA offerings, they have the regular, evening cohort, they have the weekend executive cohort, they have, and then the online cohort is something else that they can, that a person who wants an MBA, who again might be working full-time and needing that extra time to kind of fit it into their schedule, especially if you're a mid-level manager and not the boss and you need to kind of accomplish your work at the same time. So it's been pretty amazing. And then the undergraduate program is rated, number 11 in the country by U.S. News and World Report?
Yep, number 11, and along with that, number 4 for veterans. We have a lot of pride in our serving undergraduate students and especially those who are military connected.
So. Yeah. So, without getting too political here or this is talking about the good things going on at the university, not the challenges. There's lots of other shows that are dealing with the challenges. But if you could talk just a little bit about the acquisition of an existing online university and how that is being melded into the university experience and the 5-year plan on that. If you could just talk about how that might affect you in the future and affect the enrollment with Arizona Online.
Yeah, I might be part of the not so vocal minority, but I am pretty excited about the future of after the acquisition and renaming of what's now the University of Arizona Global Campus. Mm-hmm. It it allows us to be a little more nimble in the online space. And, you know, right now, if we think about what we're producing in Arizona online, our peer institutions are the same peer institutions that we have on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, R1, AAU institutions.
That means Research One. Yep. Means they're a research institution that gets significant funding for grants and government and private grants to come in and do top-level research in the community. And AAU stands for?
The American Association of Universities, right, which is the highest distinction you can have as a university in the States.
And as a land-grant university, it's those two things are pretty powerful.
They are. And so we compete with other schools that are peers on that, University of Florida, the University of California system. But what Global Campus does is it allows us to move into serving a broader student base that would be more in line with Western governors, Southern New Hampshire, mm-hmm. That requires, sometimes those students don't have the same academic background. They might need more help. Oftentimes they have different obligations, so the semesters are shorter and more condensed, but just a lot more put into it. And the financial aid model works a little differently. So I see it as a way to fulfill our land grant mission even to a greater extent by opening education up. That doesn't mean like it's all perfect and we have a lot of things to solve, but I think it's the future's bright. And I will say, in full disclosure, in December, Arizona Online and UAGC were both reorged into a new unit on the university campus called the Office of Online Initiatives. And so I report to the same person that they report to, and that's Senior Vice Provost Gary Packard.
But that would be no different than, in the Eller College, that you have a finance department, you have a marketing department, mm-hmm. and accounting department, and they're all doing their own curriculum and doing their own thing, but they're all underneath the umbrella of the Eller College. That would be a good example of that.
Exactly. Right? And we now get to collaborate. We're not working against one another as it might be perceived, but now we can share best practices. We can talk about where we're struggling and get help from the other side. And we also, we know the different ways we're serving students and how we can each individually accomplish the goal together.
Right. You know, we talk about this Monday session of Jump in Tucson being called Wonder, and it is no wonder that the Arizona Online program is ranked fourth for veterans and seventh for the MBA and 11th for online bachelor's program because of you, Caleb Simmons. It's you are doing a great job. We appreciate the things you do, not only for the online experience, but also for just governance overall. And, I met you at Arizona Sands Club, some really important event that we had, which was Faculty Happy Hour,
right,
which was really good. So, well, thank you for being with us today, Dr. Caleb Simmons, the Executive Director of Arizona Online. And we will come back in a few minutes here and talk about another initiative for undergraduate health and the campus health group coming through and doing some research. So we'll be back in a few minutes to talk about campus health and the undergraduate experience. Thank you, Caleb, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck to you in the Faculty Senate as you as you endure that for a few.
Thank you very much.
Another term. You got it. You got inducted for another term. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley with the Wonder Series. Good stories, good things happening at the University of Arizona on KVOA 1030 AM, The Voice. For this segment, our guest is Andy Nutter. Andy is a campus health service. She's going to tell us about a great data gathering they're doing and doing some wonderful stuff with undergraduates and graduate students at the University of Arizona. The Monday Wonder Program is sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Haleakala Companies. So, Andy, you're an evaluation specialist with Campus Health Service. Before you get started, I have to say that your name is Andy, A-N-D-E, and near and dear to our heart because my sister's name is Andy. Same spelling. So,
thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm excited to be here.
And an MPH is Master of Public Health, correct?
That is correct. Master of Public Health, and I completed that at the U of A as well.
Great. So tell us a little bit about your journey through why you have chosen public health as a as a degree one, and then now as a career, and why that trajectory in your life, and why did you draw yourself towards that whole public health issue?
Sure, absolutely. I was drawn to the field of public health when I was an undergraduate student at the U of A. I learned about the field because I was working at the bookstore. I was in high school, and some colleagues of mine, they were in the field of public health and explaining to me how there are so many different areas in this field that you can go into. And so that was something that immediately drew my attention. So then when I came to the U of A as a freshman, I wanted to seek more information about what that could look like, what different career opportunities could be. I really enjoyed the work and so continued on with a Master of Public Health degree. And that is where I was introduced more so to the importance of evaluation work and making data-informed decisions. It was during my MPH program that I was introduced to Dr. Peggy Glider, Pat Manning, and Lauren Pring. And during my internship with them at Campus Health Service, I was really able to apply evaluation work in the field. And that's where I fell in love with evaluation. And I'm happy to say that I've continued with evaluation work at Campus Health Service, and I'm glad to still be there.
So Campus Health Service is a pretty amazing place on the campus and what it does for the student population and the faculty population as well. But certainly for the students, it's a great service. What all does Campus Health do overall in general? Just obviously keep the students healthy, but what kind of services do they provide?
Sure. We really say that Campus Health is the one-stop shop for anything health and wellness. So we have physical therapy, we have counseling, a pharmacy, women's health clinic, x-ray, vaccination, et cetera. So we really have a wide program menu to support this community at the U of A.
And just when students aren't feeling well, they have some place to go on campus that they can go get looked at to make sure everything is okay. And Campus Health is conveniently located now in a beautiful new facility. I say new, it's probably been about 6 or 8 years now, but it's at Highland and 6th Street, correct?
That is correct. It's a wonderful location because we are near a lot of the dorms located on Highland.
Right.
And so our students can find us either on the way to the rec or perhaps if they're living in the dorms, we're not too far of a walk away.
It is amazing how many students cross that street right there to go over to the rec center and participate in that healthy lifestyle activity as well. And so Campus Health Services is important for a variety of reasons, but one of the things that you do is that you gather data, and that's what you're doing right now. And over the last several years, you folks have been into my classrooms to collect the data. So that's an interesting process. Tell us a little bit about the actual physical going into a classroom and talking to the students about what you're going to ask them to fill out, and then what they do fill out in the form that you have them fill out.
Sure. So for the past 20 years, Campus Health has administered the Health and Wellness Survey. And the reason we do this is to better understand the health and wellness of the student population at the University of Arizona. So as you mentioned, we go in person to classrooms to administer the survey, and we let students know what topics will be covered. So that includes alcohol and other drug use, nutrition, general wellness, mental health, sexual health, etc. And we collect this information because it helps inform our programming, but also our outreach initiatives at Campus Health Service.
And this survey is they have to do their fingerprints and draw blood and put their blood type out and their social security number and give them all the information they have. This is an anonymous survey. And so you're trying to get to the activities and the behaviors and the perceptions that people have, that young people have of their own personal health, and you're trying to get to those in an anonymous way so that they can be honest with you and actually tell you what their behavior is, correct?
That is correct. The survey is voluntary and it is also anonymous. So in 2020, the survey was actually, we did a test run to see what the response rate looked like with the paper pencil administration versus Qualtrics, which is an online tool. We found that the response rate was similar. So now we administer the survey completely online using the Qualtrics platform, which is really nice because we don't have all of the paper copies, right?
Right.
And so
right.
we don't have to deal with that anymore. So yes, it's anonymous, it's voluntary, and we have the Bitly link that students can type into a browser, or they can scan the QR code to participate on a phone.
I think in my experience of you say 20 years, I don't know how long I've been doing it, probably that long. I am randomly selected every year. I don't know how that happens, but I'm randomly selected every year. But I don't think I've ever had a student that has not participated in the survey, that they have gone ahead, since they know it's anonymous. They've all participated in it. And this last time you guys were in it, everybody participated. So that's good, because you're getting a full spectrum of information from people.
Absolutely. Last year, we had a 38% response rate. And in the evaluation world, that's wonderful. Being able to go into classrooms in person and having ourselves be there in person to answer any questions, I believe makes a big difference. So one, having students have that time dedicated to participate, and then also we can answer any questions if there are any.
And I think it becomes significant, at least in my case and in the Eller College, you know, we announce it to them a couple of classes in advance and let them know that it's going to be happening, and let them know that they can opt out if they don't want to participate. And then we ask them to engage fully in the process. And again, my students have all participated fully in it. But I do think that there's a sense that they are contributing in a positive way to the overall health and wellness of the campus itself. And so I think that's a good positive thing for students to feel.
Absolutely. And we want to emphasize that students are a key stakeholder in the campus community. And so when we finish running the reports and developing our quick looks, which is a brief snapshot of some of the findings, we are excited to share that back with the students so that they can see the general health and wellness of their peers.
Okay, well, we'll come back after the break and talk about the actual survey and what's on it and what the results, what you're projecting the results to be. And we'll talk a little bit more about the services that you provide to students and to faculty and staff. We're talking with Andy Nutter, Evaluation Specialist of Campus Health Service at the University of Arizona. The Monday Wonder Program is sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Halu'aloha Companies. We'll come back in just a minute and talk some more about health and wellness on campus at the university. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley with the Monday Wonder Program, sponsored in part by Michael Kasser of Halu'aloha Companies. Our guest today is Andy Nutter, who is an evaluation specialist with Campus Health Service. And part of the project that you're working on is to gather data from undergraduates about their behaviors, lifestyles, their recreational usage of things, and just how they're living out their lives as young people on campus. So can you talk to us a little bit about the modality of the actual survey that you're giving to them, how many questions are on it, and the types of questions that you're asking them?
Absolutely. So we go into classrooms to administer the survey. It was capped this year at 91 questions, and it takes students about 10 to 15 minutes to complete the entire survey. This year, we are going in person to 213 courses, and then we have 81 courses that are signed up to post the link for the survey on the D2L site for their students to complete it that way.
And that D2L site, Desire to Learn, is the platform that the university uses to administer their classes. So students go there to find their syllabus and their readings and their textbooks and all the things they need for class. So this is right there in front of them in those 81 classes. Then they see that link right there where the announcements are made about classes and so forth. So you probably get a pretty decent return from that as well, right?
We do. Right now we have 4,582 responses. Our administration period is from February 1 to March 1. And the reason we choose this time frame is because it is after the new year, but it's also before spring break.
Right.
And so we don't want to capture any data that could perhaps skew the results, perhaps if students are responding to questions about an outlier occasion of
right.
alcohol and other drug use.
Whether that would be March Madness or going on a spring break trip or, last couple of weeks before graduation, and their behavior might be a little bit different. But this is kind of if you would a lull in their academic and campus life. So it's a good time to capture them. So what's the total number? If you're at 4,900 now, what do you think you're probably going to get to? About 7,000 maybe, or
Not quite 7,000. Oh. This year, we are administering the survey at a record number of in-person courses. So that's very exciting for us to see. After the survey closes on March 1, we then go in and start the data cleaning process. Mm-hmm. So we have 5 rounds of data cleaning. And when we do that, of course, we lose some responses. And so we are hopeful that we will...
Is that like hanging chads in Florida? What is data cleaning? What are you actually doing there?
Sure. So the first round, we need to remove responses. Perhaps someone opened the survey, they read the disclosure and decided they did not want to participate. So then they close the survey. So that's the first round, is eliminating those that open and then close the survey. The second round is we have a chunk of students that decide to participate up through the demographic section of the survey. And then they decide, you know, I'm not interested in going any further and answering more questions. And so in that case, then we eliminate those responses as well. We have a few other rounds of cleaning, and that is when our evaluation team really looks at individual responses and determines if they should stay in the database or if they should be removed. And the reason we do this is to make sure that all of the responses in the database are answered as honestly as possible. And that's how that's the process of data cleaning.
Yeah. I'm just curious, in this, with so many responses coming back, do you ever get a response that you you cringe a little bit, since it's anonymous, you don't know who it is, but it's someone reporting something that, boy, I wish we could know who this person is, and so you have to reach them maybe in another way. But does that ever happen where there's a red flag that's someone's said something like some kind of behavior is risky, or you would worry about it?
Absolutely. And that is the case when we're looking at a variety of different sections on the survey. And that is why we really emphasize that the health and wellness of the student population should be a community effort. And so while we have a number of resources that we provide at Campus Health Service, we also want to reach out to other stakeholders. So that includes faculty and staff. So perhaps these are the people that students may reach out to first, and so that they have contact with them and direct them in the right location.
What are the outcomes of this? You've collected the data, you've done the data cleaning, and then you've got your results. And it obviously is going to give you kind of a roadmap as to what needs to be addressed and where campus health and wellness needs to go. But then what do you do with this data once it's all completed?
Absolutely. So the first step after we finish cleaning the data is we run the undergraduate aggregate report. And followed by that, we run a graduate report. So this really helps us determine the differences in the needs between these two separate...
And are those significant or are they similar?
They're similar. Last year, we did not have enough participation from graduate students to run that report.
I see.
This year, we have a larger sample. So we're excited to see what that looks like. But it's important to note... that the course content, of course, but also the day-to-day of undergrad versus graduate students differs. And so how can we capture that and address the needs of both populations?
And many of the graduate students are already engaged in employment and are working at jobs and then coming in at night and doing their graduate work. And so it's a little different life stage for many people that are in that graduate setting, that they're maybe not doing the undergraduate experience as you were. So... And so you'll take this information and it'll be shared with the campus, and then does that affect what campus health then provides to the community?
Absolutely. So this information, as I said, it helps us make data-informed decisions about what our next steps for programming, but also outreach looks like. So recently, Campus Health, we now have a space in the Beardown Gym, which is right next to the main library. We call it the Health Promotion Hideaway. And our wonderful team over there, Riley and Amy, they have coordinated a number of events to really engage the community. So it's a wonderful spot to go if you want to engage with therapy dogs or kittens, get some stress relief, if you want to learn coping skills and strategies, if you're in between classes and need a spot for a quick coffee, snack, or tea, and also a place to really build connection and community with other peers on campus. And so that was something that came about when, you know, we started coming back in person to classes and events and activities. And so a way to really foster this community connection so people on campus don't feel isolated.
I can tell you that in my 30 plus years of teaching at the University of Arizona for the first three decades, never once referred any student to anything. You know, a discipline we would take care of internally, and then health and wellness, you know, it was never really an issue. But over the last two or three years, there's been specifically in areas of mental health referrals there, but just the availability of this type of these things available for students to take advantage of is really a powerful tool. And it makes the experience for us as faculty members, but also as students, they have a resource that they can go and experience health and wellness, which is really important to their overall academic success.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give people an idea, last year, this is from the results from the 2023 Health and Wellness Survey, 69% of students reported that anxiety or depression made it difficult for them to work, study, go to class, or get along with other people. So 69%, that's a very high percentage. And for context, this was of a sample of 3,564 students. And of those students, we found that one in four have received counseling or therapy for mental or emotional health in the past year. It's important to note that that may not be on campus specifically, that they're right, receiving those resources. But again, back to the piece of, okay, our students are experiencing difficulty here. So how can we help connect them to appropriate resources either on campus in the wider Tucson community and help foster that community and connection and help them learn those tools and skills?
You are doing great work, and I appreciate the opportunity to work with you on the data gathering, and we look forward to the results and see what students had to say. It's a pleasure to have you here on Jump In Tucson. We've been talking with Andy Nutter, Evaluation Specialist with Campus Health at the University of Arizona. We'll have General Ted Maxwell tomorrow, Grant Kruger on Wednesday, Tom Moulton on Thursday, and I'll be back on Friday with some business success stories. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson, give us a call and maybe we can get you on the air. This is Tucson's only live local news talk station, KVOI, and thanks for listening to Jump in Tucson.